right? Much nicer than this. This is a dialogue box. Got to continue. I don't know. Just close it and I'll just.
So, what does that look like?
Yes. Yeah.
I think we should start. It's
I put them on. I put three of your sides, yeah?
Not all.
Okay. Welcome, everybody, to the panel on e-texts coming soon to a university near you. I'm Glenda Morgan. I'm the Director of Academic Technology Services at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where we're doing some interesting things with e-texts, and I will let my fellow panelists introduce themselves.
I'm Victoria Geddes. I'm the Director of the Digital Union at Ohio State University.
They're in the middle of
And yes, the part of the title that's off to the colon in our thing is this accent up a loser, because to my right I have
Pat Reed, and I'm the at Purdue University, the manager of teaching and learning initiatives.
Okay, and this really is going to be a panel. We're not going to deluge you with lots of content. We want to actually get a conversation going and uncover some of the issues that we have encountered as we roll out e-text initiatives at our campus. This panel really had its origins in a conference that we held at Illinois in Urbana last summer. We had this thing called the e-text unconference, and my apologies once again for using that terrible term unconference, because it's so jargony and it makes my teeth all get up and run around my mouth. But it really did summarize what we were doing at the time, because there was all this stuff going on about e-texts, but it seemed that people weren't really uncovering the issues, weren't really thinking through the issues. It seemed almost like people were rushing to solutions. And so I wanted to get a conversation going about what sorts of things we need to think about with e-text so that we could actually make careful decisions. There's a whole lot of uncertainty about the direction that we're going to go to with e-textbooks. You know, I think Vicky described it last night. As it happens, we were in a pizza joint having dinner. But she described the whole e-textbook thing as somebody picking up some spaghetti and throwing it at the wall to see what sticks. And that sort of has been the approach in a way. For my sins, and I'm very lucky about this, but I get to live with a librarian who is a specialist on scholarly communication. So we have a lot of dinner table conversations about the role of the big deal in libraries and the kinds of issues. And the parallels with textbooks are so clear to me that I think before we go down roads we don't want to go down, we actually have to think clearly in higher education about this, especially given the kinds of costs that students are facing. The College Board estimates that the average cost for students right now for textbooks for a year is $1,200. UCLA recently did a more nuanced, a more localized study, and they found it was close to $1,500 a year. So, you know, it's a pretty giant amount, and, you know, the cost of textbooks has risen dramatically, much, much more than the consumer price index, inflation, all those kinds of things. So I think it's something we need to go into intentionally and thoughtfully and covering the issues. So what we're going to do, I'm going to quickly finish my introduction. Then I'm going to tell you about what we're doing at Illinois. Vicky's going to talk about what they're doing at Ohio State. Pat's going to talk about what they're doing at Purdue. We're then going to sort of talk about what some of the issues are so that you can get a listing of the issues. And, in fact, there's a handout on the back chair that you can get to get some of these issues as well. We're then going to open it up for conversation because we really do want it to be interactive.
In the meantime,
we also want people to follow us on Twitter. The hashtag for the session is PanelQs, so PanelQS. So fire off questions on Twitter, have a conversation, heckle, all those good things. So, e-text books. And when I say e-text for the next 45 minutes, I mean e-textbooks, so textbooks in digital format. It seems to me that there are four basic models that we're seeing right now in terms of e-textbooks. So one is the kind of model that EDUCAUSE and Internet 2 are exploring, you know, with products like CourseLoad, where schools sign up for an evaluation or an exploration research kind of thing. They pay a certain amount of money. Students get textbooks. Cornell has been part of that, Wisconsin-Madison, and it's a really interesting model. The second kind of model is, of course, like the CourseSmart model. CourseSmart is a company that's owned by a consortium of publishers. They're offering, they're also part of Internet 2. They're offering textbooks through their platform there. A third model that I've seen quite a bit of is especially in community colleges, which are quite concerned about the fact that increasingly students are not buying textbooks for their courses, which really has some deleterious effects on their course completion and their mastery of the material. So there are a number of community colleges out there, and I know Rhonda Epper, who's here at the conference, knows quite a bit about this, where they've actually done deals with publishers to buy textbooks and then charge students through course fees at a discount so that students all get a copy of the textbook so that they don't have to do these juggling kinds of acts. A fourth model, which I'm going to talk about in detail in a bit, is a sort of self-publication model. So we're at Illinois are doing this. I know UCLA is starting to explore it. Michigan, in some respects, is doing that, where the university has sort of started to explore putting out their own textbooks on their own platform or on a platform that they've acquired from somewhere else. So these are the four basic models. One element that you're starting to see a lot of is a situation where there's a sort of all-in kind of model, where everybody gets charged for a textbook or everybody has to buy a textbook, where there's no choice for the students. And that's something that I think we need to sort of think about seriously. So I want you just to have that in the back of your head as you think about these things. So in brief, e-textbooks at the University of Illinois. A couple of years ago, we had a faculty member who teaches in our rhetoric department. She teaches, she managed basically the freshman comp requirement. And she had a textbook that she had written that she published through one of the major publishers, starts with a P. It was a completely online textbook. She's really into multimedia. There was a lot of video, a lot of those kinds of interactive features. She was not happy with the job that the publisher at that point was doing with her textbook. And she had been smart enough to negotiate a good contract with them where she retained the copyright of her textbook. So she came back on campus and started going from college to college saying, can you help me get this thing online? She eventually ended up in our School of Agriculture. We have a very great School of Agriculture at Illinois. She landed up at the School of Ag, and they said, yeah, we could give that a thought. And so they developed a platform native in HTML5, and they put this textbook online. They called it eText. And you can go see some of what they do at etext.illinois.edu. So they started doing this textbook. Your freshman comp is a big thing, so they started selling about 1,500 of these things a semester through the freshman comp courses. And then other faculty started popping up out of the woodwork saying, hey, can you put my textbook online? You know, I've written this thing, and I just want to be able to sell it. One cool thing about this, so the revenue model is pretty cool. When the textbook was through a major publisher, it cost the students $60, roughly. We sell it for $25. And the model is that we keep half to cover costs and to plow into other kinds of projects, and half goes back to the department into curriculum and things like that. Between 2010 and 2012, the School of Ag put up three textbooks, one in biomechanical engineering, one in agriculture in general, and the rhetoric texts. It then started to look like something was going to take off there, so we moved them out of the School of Agriculture into Central IT. So come October of last year, they came and worked for me in Central IT. And we're really trying to expand the model, partly because, you know, we think there's a very variegated sort of environment and ecology out there for textbooks. There's going to be publisher textbooks, but there's also going to be locally produced textbooks. I had my student go and do some research on the sale of locally produced materials at the bookstore, for example. And she sold, you know, there were 1,100 copies sold in one semester of just course packs and things like that. So we see a giant market. The 2.5 staff who do the e-textbooks came on board with me in October. Since then, we've doubled the number of textbooks that we've done. We've just done a big chemistry textbook for our organic chemistry course, which is also going to be a Coursera text as well. So it's kind of an interesting sort of model there. We're shooting for about a $4.99 sales figure there. Again, the same sort of model. So we're not doing open textbooks. We're doing textbooks where faculty hold the copyright and where they're sold, but at a much reduced price. And so we're going to continue to explore that. We're starting to explore with the library about offering a way of providing course packs that aren't in print, because one of the things for me is, you know, students are going out there. The average price of the course packs that are on sale at our bookstore are just north of $100 per course pack. About 70% of that course pack is content that we have already purchased at the university, often at great cost. And so we see a great potential for cost saving there for students. But one thing we are finding is students want a very contained environment. So, you know, linking off here and there, even with persistent URLs, is not working for them. They actually want something that is wrapped up as a whole. So that's something we're going to explore in the future, obviously paying great attention to copyright law and things like that, because we don't want to, you know, run afoul of anything. But that's part of the model. One of the really cool things, and one of the things we've emphasized in our text, is accessibility. So our textbooks are completely accessible. It's not just the reader that's accessible. The content is completely accessible. And we work very closely with our accessibility unit. We're actually in heavy conversation right now with the National Federation for the Blind about becoming a demonstration project about how accessible textbooks can be. Illinois has a fabulous record of accessibility for people with physical disabilities, and it's something we want to continue into the digital realm, and it's something we're massively proud of. And we had 34 students go to the Paralympics, and it's just it's part of our DNA, and it's got to be carried on into this new kind of thing. So accessibility is a huge thing, affordability is a huge thing, but also using some of the resources that we have on campus to, I'm going to use that word, disrupt in some ways the traditional model of textbook production. So that's what we're up to at Illinois, and I'm happy to take questions later and talk about it more. But what is the Ohio State University doing?
Oh, yes, you may be wondering, for those of you who are not on Twitter, we thought you might be jotting down notes or questions that you would be happy to ask later on those index cards that we handed out earlier. It wasn't just here, have something to doodle on, although if you want to use it that way, that's fine too. So late last spring, my boss, who's the director of learning technology at Ohio State, said, you know, we have this invitation from Internet 2. They want us to join a pilot using a system called Course Load for digital textbooks. Should we join it or not? And he and I looked at it together. The cost was going to be $20,000 to join a one-semester pilot. And by the time we actually took a look at it, they had decided that it was only going to be with one publisher, with McGraw-Hill, and we both sort of looked at it and thought, $20,000 to work with a single publisher, yeah, it's not gonna happen. But so we started looking at digital textbooks and digital textbook pilots, and what became rapidly apparent, to me at least, was that this was not a decision that a central IT organization should be making, that this is something that faculty needed to consider and something that students really needed to have a voice in. So we put together a university-wide committee, wrote to every dean on campus and asked them to nominate a faculty member. And so we actually got 17 faculty. Well, actually it was 18 because Arts and Sciences insisted on having two faculty members on the committee instead of just one like everybody else. They wanted four, so we talked them down. But And I put this committee together with the charge that they would come up with short-term recommendations, a one-year set of recommendations, and then a long-term set of recommendations for 3 years. We figured 5 years was probably the market would change, things would change too quickly to figure out what we could do for 5 years. So we met with the committee numerous times, brought in students who were using digital textbooks to talk about their experiences with digital textbooks, and came up with what I thought were a really nice set of recommendations. And these are not published anywhere, so I'm just going to read them to you. So the first set are a set of six suggestions or recommendations that say that the university should work only with systems and material that is accessible to students with disabilities. Second, that the university should work only with resource providers, publishers, software makers, that agree to work with our legal office to protect FERPA data, or FERPA-protected data. That the university should work only with resource providers that agree to comply with OSU's legal regulations regarding click-through agreements. That the university should work only with material that can be read on any device, including a desktop, a laptop, a netbook, or a tablet. We had a long debate about whether smartphones should go on that list, and then decided that we couldn't imagine trying to read a textbook on a smartphone, so we gave up on that one. Fifth, that the university should work only with systems that allow users the option of owning or renting material. Many of the textbook publishers allow only renting, and we had heard from students that it was very important to them that they be given the option of owning the material. And that the university should work only with material that is downloadable and or could be read offline. A lot of student concern about you're being kicked offline the night before an exam and you wouldn't be able to review your textbook material. So those are sort of the basics. It should comply with legal requirements. It should be accessible. And then we had three suggestions about steps the university should take. First, that the university should provide and publish a list of systems and material that meet those above standards. That the university should supply and publish a cost comparison of resources, so printed versus digital, purchased versus rented. And third, that the university should create and distribute information on how to adopt and use digital texts for both students and faculty. So that we had that set of recommendations by about midsummer. And then we discovered some of the pitfalls. This would be the lessons learned part of all of this. Sent in the recommendations and got back a thank you note and a notification that the committee was now on hiatus and that we would be told when we would reconvene. And so there were a lot of political things going on within our organization. And I think the leadership was a little distracted. And so that's it. That's all we've done. We have not actually reconvened the committee. We haven't acted on these recommendations. These aren't published anywhere. And so in my mind, someday we will reconvene the committee and we will actually start acting on these recommendations. But so that's, for those of you who are thinking about a project, remember how important that political landscape can be.
All righty. So now back to an understandable accent. So at Purdue University, we also were asked about the course load pilot, and John Campbell, our vice president at the time, said to me, so what are we going to do? Are we going to adopt the course load pilot? And I said, well, what would be the purpose? What is it that we actually want to accomplish? And so he said, well, you tell me. So we sat down together and talked for a while, and then I went back and met with a team of my folks, and we came up with some purposes, some goals and objectives, and we prioritized them. And so what we came up with, basically, I'm not going to read all of them, but some of them we came up with were, I don't know, let's try the slide, let's see what it is. No, that's okay, leave it at that. So the number one thing is that because Purdue is considered a technology leader, we wanted to maintain Purdue's role as a leader in technology use by adopting e-texts. And that was our highest priority. Second was we wanted to lower textbook costs for students. So it didn't matter if it was all glam and glitter. If it didn't actually save the students money, then it would be a hard sell. We also wanted to have a recommended supported single e-text platform, and then we've got about seven or eight others. Probably the one that most people don't think about was we wanted to minimize administrative costs. And a lot of people adopt textbooks, e-texts, without thinking about the administrative costs that they're going to incur because of that. So at the same time we were doing that, we also did a survey of students in some classes using iClickers. And in the survey, we asked them a bunch of questions, but this one was the most telling. 81% of the students said they did not buy e-texts if they were available. So this was 662 students. 81% of them said they did not choose e-texts. So that kind of tells you, even if e-texts were less expensive, what was their opinion of them? So we went from that, and I apologize if this is not very readable. I just sort of threw together some things so I could talk about it. We identified what it was we wanted to do short-term and then longer-term. And these are the short-term and longer-term approaches that we decided to take. Instead of looking at an e-text project, we decided to take a look at a textbook affordability approach instead. That meant that we may not adopt e-texts if e-texts are not a more affordable option. One of the things we found very early on was that in order to make e-texts more affordable, it really required, in addition to adopting an e-text platform, going to the publishers and negotiating prices with the publishers directly, and that's where the real savings were. And so that meant additional administrative costs, and we needed to think about that. So these are our short-term and long-term goals. We're still working on this. I'm not going to go into any details about any of them, but I think I've got another slide. Yes, one of the things that I was asked is what happens if we don't do this? And right now at Purdue, we have several different things going on with e-texts. One of them is our pharmacy professional program is doing an e-text pilot where their professional students are required to use their e-text solutions, and they do not have a paper-based solution available to them. We're doing surveys, student satisfaction surveys on that. We have individual instructors who are working with publishers to provide e-texts, which are actually glommed together chapters from several different books. We have got other departments that are thinking about e-text initiatives. Our executive management, the EMBA program, and our international marketing management program, IMM, are using completely e-text solutions using iPads and right now I think they're using Inkling. They were using CourseSmart. And so we've got these different things that are happening. For the management school, it made sense because with an international program, if you're not familiar with international textbook sales, textbooks outside of the United States are not always the same version. They do not always come with the same media. And in order to ensure that all of the students were getting exactly the same materials, an e-text solution was really the best solution. And also, because they are international, mailing out textbooks to them was a little bit difficult. So that is the approach we're taking at Purdue. We decided that we wanted to take a centralized approach so that we could minimize the disruption of everybody going off and doing their own thing. We are we're carefully monitoring the different things that are going on now. We're also working with a company called BetterKnow, which basically develops a website presence tied, eventually it will be tied into our student management system so that students can go in and see at a glance. For this particular course, these are the required texts and these are the textbooks available from different vendors. So we've got that going on, and we also have Jetpack, which is our in-house e-text development platform, which is also called Skypack now. And you can go out to SkyPack and take a look at that if you're interested in seeing how we are approaching e-texts with our own platform. It's quite a different platform than what Morgan's university is using. So that's where we're at.
So just a quick zip through some of the issues that we think you need to think about when you think about e-texts. And I'm going to add one that we actually don't have on the list, but which I think is important. Plus, I get to blow the trumpet of the Big Ten. I am, by avocation and by job, I am an administrator. So I think in very practical terms. But I like Aristotle, I truly believe that the unexamined life ain't worth living. So I think a huge part of what we need to be doing in the next short while is really researching this issue to see how students are using these things, how faculty are, what some of the benefits are. And actually, there's some really cool stuff coming out. Some of it's coming out from Josh Morrill sitting over there at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Him and his colleagues have done some really nice work on the EduCause eText pilot with some really great data. I know I've seen some wonderful stuff out of the University of Michigan, and it's available online from their MPUB work. Michigan State apparently has some really awesome stuff as well. So there's a bunch of neat stuff, and perhaps we should add those to the resources. But some things you should think about when you approach an e-text project. One thing is, why are you doing this? There is a great tendency to, you know, there's the shiny, and we got to do it because it's new and shiny. But, you know, you've really got to think about what are the affordances and what does it get you that you can't get to in some other way. So that's a huge sort of thing to think about. Accessibility, we've said it again and again, but it really is a huge thing. And if we don't take care of this up front, it's going to really come back and bite us if we don't. And, you know, again, differentiating between accessibility of the reader and accessibility of the content. There's a lot of claims about accessibility that really are about the reader, not the content. And it's like getting a car that's great, but it doesn't have wheels. The other issue is the platform. There are a number of solutions out there that only work on one platform. So something to think about is that the platform that your students are going to use? So, for example, I'm going to pick on Know, for example. They've got wonderful textbooks. I actually have them on my own iPad, but they only work on the iPad. That's not really a viable solution. Same with iBook. You know, iBook Author is a great tool, but it only works on the iPad. So you've got to look at sort of device neutrality and platform neutrality, and that's a huge thing. Another big issue right now is availability. Is the text available as an e-text? And there's some very small percentage of texts that currently are. You know, the number is going up really rapidly with the major publishers, but are you going to, you know, if you go down a road, are your faculty going to be able to have access to that? So those are some issues, and as we continue, Vicky will...
Let me look up that page, one second. I happen to have it here. Okay. So, the majority of students are purchasing textbooks for courses. 75% of them are purchasing textbooks. 53% would rent if possible. Of those who did purchase textbooks, 68% said they would buy used books if available. 54% said they bought them from the campus bookstore, which is actually quite high considering that most universities, I believe, about 75% are buying them online. 72% of students plan to resell their books. Now, that may be because of who we interviewed here. We asked basically students in the first or second year, so they were not yet in the senior year where they wanted to keep their textbooks. So, yes, 81% of them said they did not buy e-texts if they were available.
And I know Wisconsin has some interesting data on that sort of question as well. So sometime we can pick on Josh, who thought he was just going to freeload Sting in the audience.
yeah.
The question to the students, my experience is not all e-textbooks are created equal. Some are just basically a big PDF. Yes. And others are really interactive and very compelling. So I'm wondering, that seems like problematic as far as data interpretation. I mean, will the students either the ones they looked at were the big PDFs, and they were like, no, we're not going to buy these. Or, you know, I mean, I wonder how...
Yeah, what you're raising is a very good point, but consider who these students are. The majority of students don't take a look at what it is they're buying before they actually do their homework on the last day of class. No, sorry. The majority of students do not consider that when they are considering what option to buy. But you do raise a good point in that accessibility is an issue. In the back? Let me see if I can summarize that first. I think your question is, with some parts of universities are dictating which devices their students use, and is that impacting their e-text choices? Is that the gist of it? Okay. In our management program, we've got an EMBA and the IMM, which is the International Program. In both of those, they have specifically chosen iPads, and they have narrowed it. They actually give the iPads to the students on the first day so that they know everybody's got the same device, etc. And it certainly does make it much, much easier. That was a decision by that school. It was not a decision where they came to the IT department and said, what is it you want to do? What will you support? And we actually have one of my team members is 50% working for them, and he is responsible for supporting them. And they recently changed platforms because they found that the platform they were using before, once the iPad shut down or lost power, the textbook was completely lost. And so that became something that the management school investigated, and they went to identify what it was that they felt that would be best supported by them. And with a large university like Purdue, one of the things that we run into is that each pocket is deciding its own direction, and that makes it so much harder. Eventually we're going to have to try and support these just because so many platforms are going to cause problems and students are going to get confused with each platform and the features on them and things like that. So that is why we are trying to take action now. Does that kind of answer your question? Did you want to hear from...
I think maybe we should go directly into questions because it seems like there are, and we've only got 10 minutes left, so we should...
Questions.
Yeah.
And we've got a microphone that would help for people online.
Yeah. Okay, the question was about universities publishing our own text versus open source. We've decided to explore the self-publication, and you know, we're actually getting a lot of content. One interesting little wrinkle on that, though it's not in the question, but I did want to address it, is at first there was an interesting like tension between us and the bookstore. Our e-texts are actually sold through the bookstore, so people get scratch-off cards, and the bookstore takes a small percentage and so on. And but there was a little bit of tension. But lately, somehow that tension has changed, and I'm not sure what happened, but the bookstore is now sending us faculty who self-produce content and saying, you should be putting us up on an e-text. That's much better than selling these shrink-wrap things of paper. So most of our content right now is coming from the bookstore. It's an interesting thing. We're certainly committed to open source. I mean, that's sort of where my heart is, and I would like then. I personally have questions about sustainability because, for example, at Illinois, our senators, Dick Durbin, who's a wonderful senator, and he's really concerned about affordability of college and textbooks. So he got us a nice big grant from the Department of Education to produce an open textbook actually on sustainability, and it ended up costing a lot of money, and it's out there in connections, and a lot of places in Africa are making great use of it. But in some ways, it's an unsustainable model because nobody's updating the content, and especially on something like sustainability, it should be updated a lot because it's changing a lot. So one thing, I kind of like the idea of faculty holding the copyright or the university holding the copyright, but especially faculty, because then it's their baby and they update it and create it. So, but we are also in conversation with OpenStax and with connections in terms of doing that, and we are working on putting that open source that open access textbook, the sustainability one, and we'll do others in terms of that. So, you know, I think we've got to figure out where to go there. But there's affordable and there's completely free, and I think you've got to hit a balance there. I've got a question at the back.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what role did the university library play, if any, in your projects, and do you see a role for them? It just seems that they have a lot of experience dealing with publishers and digital repositories and such. It seems like they might be a natural fit, but.
At Ohio State, on our faculty committee, we had a couple of representatives who were librarians. Who really seem to see the question as a resource availability question for students. They were trying to figure out if they were going to buy textbooks so that students would have access to them, what format should they be doing that in? And it was not a question of would they be producing their own content instead. That was not something that they were particularly focused on.
I will add my two cents. I think the library absolutely has to be a huge part of that, A, because of all the experience they have in dealing with publishers and things like that. So we're working really closely with them. At my own institution, our library director is our biggest fan. I mean, she literally is writing other library directors all around the country and saying, you've got to talk to Illinois about what they're doing there. So, you know, I think there's some natural synergies there, and I look at that relationship being closer and closer. And partly I'm sort of family, but, you know, they do have that giant experience with the big deals, and we need to leverage that.
When we go forward with our project for the long-term plan, we have already identified a cross-functional team. One of those players is definitely the library. Another is our campus copy center, because they are the ones that do the course packs. We have got the IT academic computing area, the Center for Instructional Excellence, the accessibility group, and several others that I'm forgetting. Including representative faculty members. So definitely the library has a very central part in this, and they do need to be part of the discussion. They've got so much more experience with books than we do, and they know so much more about how the students interact with them than we do. If any of you have been so shy that you've written something on your index card and don't want to stand up and read it aloud, if you could pass that over to our moderator, maybe he would read those for you. Do we have other questions? Are there any of these issues up here that you would particularly like us to discuss?
So in discussing books of any kind, part of what I think the survey you were mentioning earlier says is students don't use their books very much. So I wondered, I mean, this is to some extent about delivering them something that we already know they don't particularly use. So I would hope that most of these conversations come with another side of the coin, which is to say, here are active pedagogy techniques that force students to do that kind of work, to do the things that we want them to do with their textbooks so that they don't just get cracked on the day before the exam or to look up the problems at the end of the chapter.
Absolutely. And with the pharmacy project, one of the things that we are specifically talking with them about is, do we have the ability to provide the students with training on how to use e-texts and slide into that how to actually use a textbook? Because nobody is teaching the students how to use a textbook, but this gives us an inroads into doing that. Yes.
One of the faculty members we had on our committee was, I think, either Belgian or German, and he was a wonderful voice on the committee because he was very skeptical of what he called this American fascination with textbooks, because they just don't do that, apparently, in higher education in Germany or wherever he was from. He said, you know, you'd get to the first day of class, the professor would say, here are five or six books I would recommend that you buy, and you wouldn't buy any of them, but you would go and make sure you made an appointment with the professor early in the term, sit in his office, look around, figure out which books he's reading, and then you go buy those.
First of all, thanks. There's a lot of good information here. I'm just curious. It seems like you've worked in relative isolation, and I know these projects are extremely expensive and very time-consuming. Has there been any conversations that you know of, since all of you are working heavily on homegrown solutions rather than going with what someone is offering on a commercial basis, have your institutions talked about a consortium where you start pooling those resources rather than each of us in reinventing the wheel, that you get together and take a leadership role in actually building something that multiple institutions can use?
Absolutely, and I desperately want to do that. So we are going to be, well, the Illinois model is going to be part of the Internet 2 pilot, except that we're so sui generis, they don't know how to do it, really, and we don't know how to do it yet, but they're going to advertise us as part of the pilot. But just as a way of sort of trying to solicit some of this, and that's why I'm talking here, and that's why I give these sort of things, is to try find other like-minded people who want to go forward, because it's, you know, there's a network effect going there. It's only going to be powerful once we have multiple kinds of solutions. So, you know, I've reached out to UCLA. I'm reaching out. You have reached out to Michigan. But I want to find other people that want to play in this space as well, to really sort of form that consortium and get that going. So I absolutely sort of think so. The other thing, which I didn't mention, is that we are actually working with publishers too. So we just signed a deal with Pearson. We're going to be offering Pearson content on our platform. Oddly, it, of all the books we've done, it was the most labor-intensive in terms of making it accessible, the first book that we've done, and we anticipate more down the road. So any other questions? I think we're actually only a minute left, so.
So to make life easier, you can evaluate the session at this short URL. And the capital E is important, apparently.
We have some business cards on the back chair, as well as a handout of the issues to consider. Please take some.
There's also a listing of issues.